I love you. Should we start the show?
We should, I guess.
Okay. Tell us about the smoke.
I am doing a mixture of Durban Poison and Trainwreck.
Trainwreck. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Why do you smoke?
Why do I smoke?
Yeah. Tell us about the smoke.
There's a lot of reasons to smoke pot. I think they call it sticky icky sometimes too.
Yeah.
I do it for pain. I do it for pain and then I do it for fun. And then I do it to sleep. I always do feel better if I'm outside. If I'm out, not like outside, like I'm in the parking lot of fucking Publix, but like outside with dirt on my face and dirt under my nails. And we are with less nature than we've ever been before. And we're going fucking crazy. You know what? I'm not fucking going to happy hour with Stacey this weekend. This is fucking stupid.
And I would say that this is a new kind of eco sort of activism. This isn't about cutting the hydraulic lines on a bulldozer or chaining yourselves to a tree. Although, do that. Let motherfuckers feel the climate change. Let motherfuckers feel the climate change. Hey, welcome back for another episode of Maximum Carbon Sinkhole.
I'm Casey Snow.
And I'm JP Hurst. And we are going to
dig just a little bit deeper into that maximum carbon sinkhole.
So this is episode 4, New Hope.
Wow.
Yeah.
May the farts be with you.
That's actually a rule in our household, is that when you're stoned, you can't talk about space
because
it's too
space.
Cliche.
Yeah.
I appreciate that rule.
Yeah. I think it's a fair rule.
She slapped my hand a couple of times before. She's like, JP.
We can talk about space when we're sober.
Yeah. But don't ever take a hit and be like, man, fucking the stars, man.
Have you ever thought about
fucking like Jupiter,
nebula clouds, man?
Fucking like birthing planets, man?
Yeah.
No.
No, just can't shut the fuck up. Do you know, what do you think it's like to put your feet in a methane pool on Mars?
Whoa.
Let's talk about that. Like, no, let's just not, because that's going to turn into something else.
Not allowed.
Yeah, no.
So that's a good rule for all you stoners out there.
Yeah.
No space talk.
Yeah.
Save that for
but
the
you can talk
days.
About Star Wars.
Yeah, we can talk about Star Wars and we
and
can talk
hope.
About The New Hope. Last episode, episode 3, we talked about slaying hope, killing your hope. Very quickly, I want to read from a book where we've gotten this. This is from the Dark Mountain Manifesto.
Solid creeds.
Yeah. From the Dark Mountain Manifesto. Point number 8. The end of the world as we know it is not the end of the world, full stop. Together we shall find the hope beyond the hope, the paths that lead to the unknown world ahead of us. So in the last episode, episode 3, we talked about the first hope, the hope beyond the hope that we have to kill. And now, since we slayed hope in episode 3, we want to talk about the real hope. We talked previously about the false hope, all the bullshit clogging our minds and our screens, trying to get us to look over here, all the false saviors.
Right.
So, Casey, let's define what real hope means. How do you contrast false hope between real hope when facing a problem, an intractable problem like climate change?
Well, I think it goes very much with Paul Kingsnorth's idea of new stories.
Yes.
We need to have a new way of looking at the world and looking at our society. And we can't just keep doing all of the same things that we do because they're either culture or their habit, or that's what we're striving to do. And that goes, you know, from the top up, top down. You know, we need to get rid of capitalism, but we also need to get rid of, you know, these weird cultural things that we have to do, you know,
like Christmas.
Like Christmas. Yes.
Like
fucking fireworks ever.
Yeah.
Like ever. Like, no.
But I need my fireworks after the baseball game.
Fucking let him put it in his ass and light it. Okay. That's what he's allowed to do.
She won't take my fireworks away.
Fireworks. Yeah, the fake cobwebs that you put on the front of your house for a couple weeks.
Yeah, come on.
Like, just get some real cobwebs.
Yeah.
We've got a...
And candy, period.
Yeah.
Like, maybe just candy isn't a thing. It's, you know what it's called? It's called fucking fruit.
And it's called crickets.
Fruit that can be grown within 5 miles of your home.
Bowl of crickets, and we have plenty of brown widows that you can borrow. They have crazy webs and crazy ball spike.
They live all
egg sacs.
Over
they're
by
crazy
our front
looking.
Door, and
yeah,
you know,
we don't even
like,
have to
you
decorate.
Should get rid of them. And we're like, well,
We could let trick-or-treaters here, but we're not.
No.
But the front of our house is looking scary as shit with those little spiky egg sacks. Level designers for Diablo 4.
Yeah.
Got to check out the Brown Widow
egg sacks. They're pretty cool. Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Metal
can you
shit.
Imagine them jumping out? We haven't actually seen them birth. Although I have seen them moving inside, which is kind of neat.
Oh, man. That's fucking hardcore.
Yeah. And everybody here is like, that's a black widow. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's a brown widow. It's black. Yeah. But if you look really, really, really close, but you got to look kind of close, there's a little brown. You can tell. And the best way of telling is you kind of poke them and then they play dead. That's a brown widow.
And
they're like, don't kill me. And I'm like, don't worry, dude. Let me just pick you up and move you.
And I know you hear us bullshitting here right now, but we're kind of, in a very flippant way, getting at sort of what the real hope is. It's to get a magnifying glass out and don't burn the ants, but watch them.
I mean, so much is like, wait, just look at how our society does things.
Before any of us resort to nihilism, a real hope would be a massive decarbonization of our economy.
Correct.
And even if we could do it here in America, like a big if, like imagine you're thinking about it. You're like, okay, mortgages don't exist. Neither do commutes.
Yeah. Period. Like, just think of that.
There's no more oil. Planes are grounded.
Yeah.
So just imagine that. Yeah. And imagine we could pull that off here.
Right.
You know, could we pull that off around the world simultaneously?
Yeah. But there would like have to be that, like, what's that perfect warning? You know, where you tell people that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like, because you have to give a little bit of warning, but you can't give too much to people.
Yeah, it's like you can't just drive 30 miles from your house anymore. You don't have to go anywhere anyway because your job has been canceled and the Amazon box is coming to your house. Don't worry. Every 2 weeks, Jeff Bezos personally, he's making the deliveries himself.
He's on foot.
Yeah, We've got one of those collar bombs on him, like he's delivering pizzas.
Oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea.
So,
and that's what capitalism does. It makes you crazy and makes you put bombs on people's fucking necks. It's crazy. Fact.
Drives you fucking batty.
Yeah.
So you can go batty just waiting for these magical fixes.
Well, and even just imagine having a different imagination for what success is.
Yeah.
Right? And what happiness is. Like, those things, you just have to twist it a little bit, you know? And if you look at it a different way, you find that, you know, happiness isn't what you have.
It has to happen on several levels, right? We have to change the story that we tell in the media, in our entertainment.
And who tells it?
And who tells it? And in our politics, in our economy. So that's like a big overarching, that's the project of, you know, a generation.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we just need to develop a new language. Interpersonally, maybe in your family, maybe in your community, or maybe just you, redefining what happiness is. And again, it's just buying less shit.
Right.
And doing less stuff. And the idea is not, it's not some fucking Protestant shit where you're supposed to get off on the fact that you're depriving yourself of satisfaction.
Right. No, yeah, it's, no, it's, that's not
it's
it.
Not
and
it.
There is detox.
Yeah,
there's detox,
a detox
for giving up different things in the machine, like even little tiny ones. I mean, I totally get it. But what's funny is the further away you get from it, you're like, how did I ever do that?
And why?
Why did I like that? Or, you know, whatever. And that's an interesting...
Why did I get in my car and drive to the gym?
Right.
Why
is that what I did?
There's no prescription, although... we're going to get into next some tangible things that you can do and some examples of how we have cultivated a new hope. So in kind of summary, sort of defining what a new hope looks like, it's, as you said, you know, taking Paul Kingsnorth's idea, again, a guy that we hope to have on the podcast soon, an environmental writer based in the UK who's talked a lot about and written a lot about the foundations of dark ecology, which is
highly recommended.
We have to stop lying to ourselves and we have to deal with reality.
Right. And it's not pretty. And a lot of it isn't going to be easy.
Yes.
But the sooner we start, the easier it's going to be.
And
maybe not for us, but for the next people and for somebody who is... You know, both they put the birth control in the water and like, you know.
Cosine.
Yeah. And like, if you got to kill your young, you got to kill your young.
Yeah. Wolves do it.
Yeah. You know, I want to see the people that are here have a nice planet to live on and yeah. nice lives and happy lives and fulfilling lives, you know?
And so the best way maybe to summarize the idea of New Hope, it's about adaptation. And again, rather than think of it as depravity, not depravity as in you're a psycho, but depriving yourself of creature comforts or experiences that you're used to, it's the idea of saying, how can I adapt? Because right. either my kids or future generations are going to have to adapt. And the least I can fucking do right now is try to change how I brush my fucking teeth.
Right. Right.
And exactly. there's beauty in that. And there's power
in
that.
There is. And let me tell you, your teeth get really fucking white.
Oh, man. Baking soda's great.
Yeah. And you're clean as shit. I know that sounds weird. You're like, shit's not that clean. Well, you're right. Clean as urine.
Okay, yeah. Everyone, let's go. Hey, everyone. It's me, Dick Blister. While I'm not playing Vikas, your favorite cat from the hit TV show Tuxedo Supremacist, I'm saving the planet one used mattress at a time. And it's your lucky week. With the help of your new favorite podcast, Maximum Carbon Sinkhole, I'm able to give all listeners a screaming deal here at Dick Blister's Used Mattress Emporium. We're overstocked on brown and yellow stained mattresses, and if you're looking for hope, look no further. Nothing smells more like hope than a freshly soiled stranger's bed. You've probably been on the fence a while, trying to decide which stain is best for you. But I'm here to tell you, brown and yellow are for everyone. Each has a unique smell, and 1 in 10 is still moist. Call 1-800-BEDWETTER today! And we'll have a crew of four equally smelly, sweaty, and surly men at your door for no apparent reason. Also, mention this ad and you'll get 17% off at Dick Blister's Used Mattress Emporium with me, Freakus. Is that it? What else do I have to do? I fucking hate these people. Anybody have some spray paint and a paper bag?
So on the idea of cultivating a new hope, we mentioned, you know, some consumer things that you can do, the idea that you're sort of learning to adapt. There's probably three pieces to cultivating a new hope.
Right.
One is changing the stories that we tell.
Right.
Two is adapting, and a lot of that is through consumer choices, but it's right. also your behavior and then your frame of mind.
Right.
And adapting how you define success and how you define happiness.
Right.
And a third way to cultivate new hope is through observation.
Right.
And observation.
Simple observation.
Simple observation. Simple grounding observation. There's a book that we want to read from called The Ground Truth, A Guide to Tracking Climate Change by Mark L. Heinlein. So, Casey, before we get into just a quick reading from this book, why don't we define phenology? First, let's define what phenology isn't.
So it isn't racist.
No, it's not Leonardo DiCaprio from Django Unchained.
Yeah,
that's not phenology.
Fuck Leo.
So phenology is what, Casey?
Phenology is essentially just going outside and looking at your habitat and watching it change due to climate change. For me, it's an interesting way of also, you know, accepting, you know, another animal's adaptation due to what we're doing is essential to our own being. So it's kind of a...
When we think about adapting, observing the rest of the world around us, the rest of the non-human world, also change the story that they tell.
Which and change
their behavior.
Right. And instead, sometimes it's that they all died too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of different options for this new world. And, you know, we have to decide how much we want to try to preserve at least the outside world as much as possible.
Yeah, and we know, like, there are some fatalists among us who are observing the species death, like, you know. They've got one of those little umpire a baseball umpire counters in their hand, and every 15 seconds they're just clicking off another species gone, another species gone, another species gone. That's not the kind of observation that we're recommending, although that's useful.
No, I mean, I think different people deal with it in different ways. Right. And there's some fatalists, and some are cheering. Some are like, fuck it, fuck it, fuck it. You know, yeah. I say that with a Southern accent because I assume, but.
good assumption. So phenology is the idea of observing what's going on around you. And Mark L. Heinlein, here in his book, The Ground Truth, A Guide to Tracking Climate Change at Home.
Which I want to say, I highly recommend, even though it's pretty elementary if you're already kind of a nature person.
Yeah.
But it feels good to read, and he's a really good writer.
And if you're not a nature person, it's a great
introduction.
Yes.
Really, really good introduction.
Fantastic. So I'm going to read a few quick passages from here just to get your head around this. So to start with, he talks about this concept of your dooryard. And the book references the dooryard, the idea of a dooryard,
yeah,
which is a fungible place.
It is. It's a self-defined place. It can be your front yard. It can be out your back window. It can be 2 square miles. It can be a whole nature preserve. It can be, if you have 20 acres, it's your whole 20 acres. It's your choice.
It's the idea of picking a place where you want to mentally make your stand.
Yeah. And I mean, for some people,
bear witness to what's going on.
Yeah. It could even be at work. Maybe that's the only place where they have a tree or, you know, any kind of wildlife that they can even observe.
That's right. So here we go. It is here in your dooryard that climate is changing, has been changing for quite some time, will continue to change almost certainly at faster rates. Such a homely term, though, dooryard. It is still in use today in some places to describe a patch of outdoors where the business of human work and play, in and out of doors, transacts with the natural, the world over which we assume we have little control. It's a designating kind of place. The specific meaning of the word draws a contradistinction to the front yard, a space meant to impress society, and the barnyard, a place for working with animals. The dooryard is close in, a place for work, but also for exchange. It's where the kitchen garden might be, full of herbs and simple greens, as well as a few varieties of posies. But it's also full of insects and is a favored place for cats, or if there are no cats, then other creatures that make their livings by living as near to human habitation as they can. Mice, for example, or voles.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I did kind of shortchange Everybody has access to
everyone has a
phenology.
Dooryard.
Yes. Yeah, a dooryard, even if you live like really, really, really urban. Like I lived really, really urban and there was still fucking birds and fucking raccoons and fucking all kinds of shit.
There's another book that you read this summer. Well, she reads, you know, I don't know, a couple dozen books this summer, but that's helped me sort of stave off or repress some of my plant blindness. I should say that you've opened my eyes to plants in a new way. Yeah. And so for an example of expanding our dooryard, we have several dooryards to choose from around here, but one of my favorite is our running route.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm starting to recognize more and more species along the way, even just tiny little flowers that you would just been like, oh, wildflowers,
I know,
or like weed flowers.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like
you've even pointed ones out that I didn't see.
Yeah. And so, and then also just, you know, sometimes you might see a crow overhead or you might see a murder of crows. And before you might have just been like, oh, I got my music on and then, you know, murder of crows. But the idea of phenology in your dooryard is just watching for another 15 seconds.
Yeah. And what's funny is you get to learn, you know, all their calls. Like I know when a murder of crows is chasing a predator or if they're just moving off for a new place to eat. Like they have two very different sounds. And that's a neat thing to start to know their language a little bit because they know our language more than we think, you know?
Yeah. And so there are practical reasons to change the way that you observe what's happening around you, specifically in your dooryard.
Right.
Especially if you're a gardener, it's good to know these kinds of things. But we would like to argue, and I think that Heinlein does in this book, that there's a practical sense to these observations in terms of helping you figure out ways to adapt and helping you figure out ways to cope and cultivate that new hope.
Correct.
So let me read this another quick passage here that kind of brings it home. We learn in our science classes that scientists make observations. They also develop hypotheses, devise and execute experiments, test theories. So goes the litany of scientific method. But let us pause to contemplate those observations. An observation must have about it the characteristics of the here and now. It cannot be speculative, reaching somehow for the future, for that would taint both the process and the outcome. With this presentness, scientists share some part of the spiritual experience of one who is mindful, someone who is attuned to what is here and now. This is true no less of phenological observation than it is of any other pursuit in science. Each observation I make of grasshoppers, of bluebirds, of small pools of water from yesterday's rain binds me immediately to my dooryard and to the present, even as climate change grinds along, like a steamroller on an endless road, momentous in all its implications. My presentness and yours releases us temporarily from the incessant and often noisy directionality of climate change. I love his writing.
Yeah, his writing is great. It's serious. It's fun. He's a really good writer.
And has that been your experience as you've become attuned more to the idea of phenology? And again, like phenology can mean like keeping actual records. And
oh, this yeah. book kind of yeah, goes. Yeah, yeah.
And like there's some really interesting shit about that. Like if you're keeping a spreadsheet.
Right.
But it, at least in your idea of phenology, Casey, like has this been your experience that it's helped you become more present?
Oh, without a doubt. It kind of coincides. It's interesting. It coincides when I kind of said no more social media.
Oh yeah.
Zero social media. I was already outside a lot, but I had a new investment to outside because I was like, well, you know, I didn't even know those 585 friends I had or however many I had. I knew maybe six of them, but I can get to know thousands of beings that are just right out and outside, trees and little shrubs and weird flowers. And I don't even know what that is. I can't figure it out. I got to figure it out now. And
if you're sort of resistant to that idea, you're like, oh, that's fucking twee. Like just consider it for a second.
Not if you smoke a bowl, dude.
Yeah. Don't talk about space, man. Go look at the fucking butterflies.
No, for real. Like it will freak you out.
Yeah, and again, let's maybe this is helpful too. Like I didn't grow up like hanging. Oh, like I wasn't a tree hugger growing up. Like I was a meat and potatoes kind of Missouri boy.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm a big dude. I played football and sports and shit growing up.
Yeah.
Like,
trust me. He didn't tell me he was from Missouri right away.
I was like date number four. We spent all day in the garden yesterday and I just wanted to go do it again.
It was the best day. And
because I wanted to look at the, like, I feel like, oh, we're watching caterpillars turn into butterflies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're watching it. It's amazing.
And I'm more interested in that and sort of watching the change in our dooryard than I am anything that happens
like
online.
Like watching a game?
Certainly more so than watching the sports ball.
Yeah.
Watching the piggers.
Yeah.
And so, just consider what Casey is saying there. If you're like, oh, well, you know, it's just like a tree hubber. Well, do you want to go watch a leaf? That sounds boring.
And also, you know, it's not boring because like there could be 1,000 assassin bugs on that leaf.
And those guys
fucking
are fucking
owning
cool.
Shit like a motherfucker. And that's cool as shit.
Yeah. And so there's a larger philosophical construct that I come back to all the time, which is the idea of what is real. And I think that there's a direct correlation between, let's see, I've opened myself to this. I've opened myself to the direct correlation between being around what is real and rejecting what is not as a means to find happiness and to cultivate happiness. Yeah. I shouldn't say it's something that you find, it's something that you plan, you sow, and then you invest time
in.
Into.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, what is real? Rocks, trees, rivers, bugs.
Right.
That shit's real.
Gophers.
Plants, gophers, beavers. You know, the person you love is real, the pets in your house.
Right.
Or these are things that are real. Watching the sun up. You know, watching the sun come up, watching the sun go down.
Yeah, looking at the clouds.
Going for a walk. These are things that are real, and there's something human about knowing these and cataloging them and taking pleasure in them versus what is unreal, which is holidays and cards and commutes and governments.
You know, all had purposes,
LLCs,
right? That have long expired.
Yeah,
like long expired. So it's just like, why haven't we not rewritten this? And also, the further we are away from nature, the more healthy consumerism is.
That's right.
That's just a fact.
Yeah.
So Think of that.
Yeah. So checking out slugs and shit on your dooryard step for it.
Totally.
And
totally.
Again, consider it.
Also, speaking about that whole language of the crows, learning to listen to the crows and how they listen to us, because they have to. It's based on their survival. They know that we're largely bad, so they need to pay attention to what we're doing. But also, if we learn everything else's language as good as they know ours, we'll have a good idea of being like, oh, they're reacting to the X, and X is bad for me, so I must think something's happening, because a lot of times nature knows what's happening before we do. That's, again, talking like we're outside of it, we're inside of it, but whatever.
And here's the third and last just brief excerpt I'll read from The Ground Truth, A Guide to Tracking Climate Change at Home by Mark L. Heinlein, which really starts to connect the ideas of phenology, your dooryard, to the larger observation of climate. But from the time that climate change started to worry climatologists, they began to have concerns about the distribution system itself. Best known among their concerns is the worry that Greenland's glaciers will melt rapidly, bringing a reservoir of fresh water to the North Atlantic, where the changed salinity and density would alter the system of currents in that region or even shut them down. Were that to okay, so that's brutal, right? That's fucking brutal.
That's brutal.
Let's read on. Were that to happen, the Earth would no longer experience a uniform warming, but would undergo a more drastic change. Such a change might be sudden, the direst of threats, or more gradual over one or more decades. The point of all this is that the principal driver of weather, which when averaged over some period, like 30 years, we call climate, does not simply warm 1, 2, or 3 degrees Celsius. This is a good point, because the whole idea of, you know, stopping warming at 1.5 degrees Celsius or 2 degrees Celsius or 4 degrees Celsius is catastrophic. Like, I do think that people are starting to, they're able to extrapolate more and more because it's been drilled into their heads. Like, 4 degrees warming is fucked up. But I really like, I don't feel like I've read it anywhere else besides Heinlein here. The idea of the global average temperature sort of warming by 2, 3, 4 degrees Celsius. Like, you've now been conditioned to think that that's dire.
Right.
But what he's saying is that that really doesn't tell the story very well. And this is where I'm sort of showing his hand here, but he's saying that the story is actually told better in your dooryard.
Yeah, no, for real.
And here's how. So this is what I'm saying. This is how he connects it. He goes on and says, if it did, there would be rather less to worry about. Instead, changes caused by warming will revise and reconstitute patterns of circulations, rejigger oscillations, put feedbacks in motion here and there. Climate does not change uniformly or even gradually. As it changes, the seasons, not the astronomical kind, but the felt sort, what you find in your dooryard, are changing with it. Climate modelers are more than happy to roll out predictive curves of several sorts to show how climate change could unfold. What they cannot do is provide certainty about uniform versus not uniform, or gradual versus drastic, and they cannot be very precise about what happens where you live. It can be said that to everything there is a season, but plan for seasons to come at different times in different ways. The predictive climate models that scientists make will be revised by what happens in real time as predicted temperatures are compared to real temperatures taken from real thermometers on the ground. Ground truth, this is called. Those temperatures will be averaged over a 30-year period to provide a new climate normal, and it will be a warmer normal. As I have argued here, this doesn't tell us much about the world around us, but your phenological observations will. Your phenological observations will provide a fuller picture in one place, more ground truth, of climatic changes that stem from carbon-forced warming.
And that, it just, I feel like that, I mean, this book got me from the beginning, but that was it. It was like, wow, it's kind of like therapy, right?
It is.
It's like, even though it's like important for the idea of adaptation and understanding what's happening, it's also just kind of like a detox of truth, but of truth. Like, I'm still seeing it, but I'm seeing it through my eyes, not through eyes of reporters, not through eyes of disasters,
right?
But through what is happening right here. And the thing is, as you start to see little disasters,
oh yeah,
these little mini disasters, mm-hmm. they aren't named storms. It's oh my God, the butterflies didn't come, you know?
Right. Oh my God, we fucked up when we transplanted that tree.
Yeah.
We fucked it up.
Yeah.
We didn't do it right.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see what forces are happening, even just little mini forces that maybe don't have anything to do with climate change, or maybe they absolutely do. And you get to start to know the difference, right?
Yeah.
And like, oh, this is normal. Some things just die, you know?
There's the cycles that you become attuned to, but then you become simultaneously attuned to this idea that things are resilient and they don't need us and they're fucking fragile.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's this interesting duality, and it could be the same plant and it could be the same animal.
Exactly, exactly.
And you're sort of like, wow, this thing is prolific. It grows everywhere. And then you're like, I don't know how it lives at all.
Right, right.
I don't know how it's going to come back from that injury or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really amazing. And you know, you get really invested in your dooryard too. And you're just suddenly it's like this, you fuck television, man. You got to go out and see what's happening out there today.
Yeah.
You know?
And I would say that this is a new kind of eco sort of activism. This isn't about, you know, cutting the hydraulic lines on a bulldozer or chaining yourselves to a tree. Although do that.
I support.
Yeah. We'll throw some money on your GoFundMe legal campaign.
Yes.
But this is sort of a direct ecological action that you can take at home. And it's a little bit of self-help, like Casey said. It's definitely a lot self-help.
Yeah,
the idea of I can't do shit happening at the power plant.
Yeah, it's not selfless. I mean, I'm doing this because it would make me so happy, but it really does. And despite how depressed I am about the state of the planet.
Yeah. So we have to tell different stories. We have to be honest. As we discussed last episode, that there's no magic fix coming.
No.
Or no savior.
No, the hope isn't the, you know, four car garage.
No.
4,500 square foot home, you know,
we have to change the stories that we tell at large. We have to change the stories that we tell ourselves in our own head.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And we have to find ways and create ways to adapt, and we have to observe.
Right.
So what's been the favorite piece of your dooryard? What's been your favorite thing to observe so far?
So, well, I'm kind of torn because I love the butterflies, but I think I love the plants the butterflies love more. And I find it more interesting how they both, you know, they sacrifice parts of themselves for these butterflies in order to get pollinated. And I find that is really amazing. Like, yes, you can eat all of my leaves, but you'll make more of me, so it's worth it.
There's an interesting I would agree with that one of the most interesting pieces of becoming attuned to the dooryard is watching the symbiotic relationship.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just certain plants and butterflies, but it's also, you know, certain trees in the soil.
And birds. And
you know, pollinators and other bees and red wasps and things like that. The birds, the squirrels, the way that the birds will eat certain nuts and then drop them and then the squirrels will come pick them up.
Yeah, absolutely. And the time of year the squirrels eat the mushrooms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had no idea the squirrels ate mushrooms. Or holy shit, they eat the shit out of mushrooms. Yeah.
I'm just waiting for the squirrels to start seeing things, so then I'll eat those mushrooms.
We're hoping the squirrels can be our shamans and lead us through the rabbit hole.
Yeah, but we've also learned that squirrels are fucking assholes.
Yeah, they're little dicks. One of the things that I've liked about noticing all these symbiotic relationships is that it starts to suggest, well, what role do I play here?
Right.
What role do we play?
Yeah. Where do we fit? Where do humans fit, and where do we fit individually here?
All these things are working together. And another thing it's done is it's reframed my sense of time. Like we tend to think that like trees are slow growing and flowers and plants and like, oh, it's, you know, it's like watching the grass grow. It's like watching paint dry. Right. Like all this just boring. But man, I swear to God, you go look at just one single plant. I would challenge you to do this. Go look at it 6 or 8 times in a day.
Yeah.
And just watch it.
Yeah.
And you're going to be like,
things
holy
happen.
Shit.
It sweats. It moves. It flowers.
Oh, it flipped the leaves
wilts.
Over. Why did it do that?
It does all this stuff. Yeah. It gets eaten a little bit.
Yeah. Why? Oh, it's curled up. Oh, it's reacting.
It's
to
wilted.
The humidity.
Oh, it's.
Yeah. It's reacting to the sun on it.
It's bizarre. And you become very connected.
Yeah. And you start to think that there is some crazy shit happening outside that I've just taken as nature.
Yeah.
It's just sort of this wallpaper that affects me when I go from the Reddit machine to my car to the chicken factory, right, and then back to my car and then back to the Reddit machine.
Right.
And then outside is just sort of this like vaguely greenish, grayish, bluish, brownish.
And mostly manicured in a lot of places, yeah, you know, which nature still happens there depending on how much is sprayed. But
yeah, so if the Reddit machine and the chicken factory, like if that's making you feel good, keep it up. But if it's not, we're suggesting...
Well, and it's not like it's not. Nobody's like really, really happy. They're reacting to it. There's not an option. So it's like anybody who says I'm really happy in the machine, I bet you that they're not, but they think they are.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes the same thing.
Were you left in shock after the UN released information about climate change that scientists have been telling us for decades? Are you unable to rationalize reality? Do you have trouble sleeping? Are you short on happy endings of all kinds? Have you considered getting some help? Well, hang up that phone, turn off the internet, and stop talking to strangers. Instead, call New Realities, your one-stop shop for a better world. What's so bad about climate change? Weren't we thinking of colonizing Mars anyway? Now you don't have to be a billionaire with a rocket to escape our planet's current climate. You just need a wristwatch, a pair of sunglasses, and a better story. New Realities can deliver a narrative that makes all endings good. In less than 30 years, we'll have Mars right here on Earth. Screw coral reefs. We'll finally have methane oceans. You know what that means. Fart jokes for years. Remember trees? You don't have to, what with all the dust storms. Become a Mars colonist on Earth today. Call 1-800-NEW-EARTH for your free introductory membership. The first 100 callers will get a free Martian replica rock. When reality bites, New Realities can take you to Mars on Earth.
So I think that's a good chance to then talk about what we're doing to cultivate new hope. And KC, I just sort of wanted to freestyle this, a list of things that we've done to give ourselves that hope beyond the hope, the new hope. And so I'll start us off here. In order to sort of feel better about what's happening with climate change and in order to feel like we weren't powerless to just sit by and wait for some magical leader to fix it, one of the things that we've done sounds drastic. We've kind of dropped out of the rat race a little.
As much as we possibly can.
And that was strategic. I think it was again, I know we keep referencing him, but in King's North's book, he tells a story about a guy who says that he's growing a garden. And they say, why have you retreated to your garden? And he says, some gardens are not a retreat. They're an attack.
Yeah.
And we feel that every day.
Yeah, we do. That was like the coolest thing. And
love
I was
that.
Like, yes.
It's an attack garden.
Yes.
Attack. No, we're actually fighting back here.
Yeah.
We have, quote unquote, retreated out of the towers and the condos and the freeway overpasses and, you know, the after hours networking and all that fucking bullshit.
Yeah, the fighting for parking.
Yeah. And now we're fighting for something different.
Yeah.
And we're doing it away from screens.
Right.
And away from sort of the crazy din of sort of, what do you want for lunch? And where are we going? Yeah, what'd you do this weekend? And did you get that? I go, I got the three series.
And, yeah. And you live for your weekends, but your weekends.
How much are those shoes? And yeah.
You live for your weekends, but your weekends end up being a fucking nightmare too. Cause then you're just trying to catch up on the shit you didn't have time to do in the week. And oh my God, it's like.
So we're cultivating an attack garden.
Yeah.
We're cultivating a retreat, an Ararat, that allows us to not completely drop out of capitalism. We've said this before. There's no ethical consumption under capitalism.
Right. And sure, you know, you go the Ted Kaczynski route, whatever.
Yeah, and we're not living in a tent or a cabin in the woods.
Yeah, we want to find there. I just think
we've got a pool.
I know. Yeah, we're still assholes. Like
it's a saltwater pool, and it's solar heated, and it's solar driven by a solar pool pond. But it's a pool. It's a pool. It's a pool, nonetheless.
That's great, though.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's indulgently great. like, put it this way, it was really cold in the pool today. It was 95.
Suffering.
Yeah. Anyways, so, but there's a way to do this where we don't have to give up everything.
So, yeah, I guess that's not a non-trivial thing that we've tried to do to cultivate some hope, is dropping out of the rat race the way we could.
Yeah.
Another thing we've done is, we've sort of alluded to this already, but we're spending more time with nature.
Yes. Yes. That's amazing. It's
and
again,
like we thought we were nature people before, right?
I did outdoors. You know, I ran outdoors. I hiked outdoors.
When we met, she had a dog that she would take hiking, and she would get stoned on the mountain, and then
get lost.
The dog would take her back to the car.
It's like, come on.
That was her.
You got the nose. Go for it.
And yet, you know, and that was living in a place like Colorado. But it's nice to figure out a dooryard where you don't have to get in the car to experience it.
Right. And it doesn't have to be a big space. You can do a lot with a very small space.
Mm-hmm. We were just looking at this guy who's got a crazy garden on 1/10 of an acre.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's so there's all kinds of stuff you can do. But just being outside, you hear things, you see things, you smell things.
And so what's the opposite of being outside? It's being inside with screens.
Oh yeah. Inside with screens or in a car, which, you know, you can look out there and say, well, I like the drive. It's a pretty drive. That's not being outside.
What do you think it is about being with screens more often than you are with grasshoppers, for example? Like, what does that start to do to your psyche?
Well, it's funny. Don't you notice like a lot of people's, you know, computer like back screen is some natural place. It's
a fucking beach. Windows 10.
Yeah. It's a fucking beach.
The
it's a rainforest.
Hill.
It's a Wouldn't fucking you rather desert. Be here, it's yes. whatever place that, you know, everybody identifies with a landscape. You know, see, some people love the desert. Some people love lakes. Some people, you know, there's snow. You know, everybody's got their thing. Mm. And so they're trying, because we're fucking desperate. We go crazy without nature, right? I mean, look at the world. We are with less nature than we've ever been before, and we're going fucking crazy.
Yeah.
So if you're like, but I don't like bugs. Like, I'm not into that. Like, that's fine. Start small. Like, I'm telling you, it will make you feel better.
Yeah. And again, you might be sitting there saying, it was like, well, I have this crazy hectic world. And like, you know, that sounds like simple. So they're basically advocating for a simple life as a way to self-help and to feel better about climate change. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really not
totally
fucking
are.
Easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is why
it's within
your reach.
It's not easy for a lot of people because they're getting pulled by other people. So, you know, we were lucky. We were like, we're both in. We both mm-hmm. have found that we are not happy. So if you have somebody, whether it's a spouse or maybe it's a family member or an old friend that's pulling you down, like, I get it, that's hard. But like, there's decisions to be made, you know, and sometimes just really looking and reassessing the health of your current life and who might be dragging you down. That's a whole different. Well, we'll talk about that. Another part is cutting the weight, man, because there's a lot of weight you can cut of people that are keeping you down. And if you're not happy, and a lot of people, most people aren't, you know, just try to do it for yourself. If anything, if you want to say, you know, I don't have it in me to give to nature. No, like never, no, let nature give to you. Go outside. You will feel better. Do it for yourself.
I think my favorite Onion headline is, I'm going to butcher it, but from memory, it's 80% of waking hours spent staring at glowing rectangles. So we've dropped out of the rat race a little, which if you find that interesting, let us know and we'll talk about that a little more.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, spending more time with nature, less time from screens. Again, very deliberate. You know, you've heard us say that we've got rid of all our social media and I don't even have a smartphone anymore and just like trying to just be outside as much as possible. And then, you know, a third way that we've really cultivated a sense of hope, not only just, you know, doing phenology and observing in a very just sort of casual way, but practically, we are growing a fucking garden, man.
Yeah.
And it's fun as shit.
It is fun. It's hard. It's depressing sometimes.
You're like, they're looking great. And the next day you're like, oh.
Yeah, everything we put in the ground has done well for the most part, but not all the seedlings.
And this will never be a gardening podcast.
No.
But just take it from us, if you're sort of gardening curious or gardening on the fence, it's really fucking cool.
It's really fun. And here's the thing. This is what motivated me largely. I don't know where the fuck my food comes from. And that just is kind of weird.
A lot of people watched Food Inc. and were like, you know, it kind of woke them up.
Yeah.
That wasn't us, but just in general.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. Some people. And for me, it was just like, okay, I'm buying with my, you know, I'm voting with my dollars. I'm buying the plant-based, organic, you know, sustainably sourced stuff, but it's still coming far away.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so
it's on
like,
a truck and it's getting handled. And then I got to go do capitalism to go buy it from the fancy store.
Who and what was injured in the process?
I got to fight for a parking spot. What we found out is a lot of people start with either an herb garden or I think a great place, a great sort of gateway into gardening is the idea of a salsa garden.
You like chips and salsa? Everybody likes chips and salsa.
Yeah. So you just grow salsa shit. Yeah. And you can do that in an apartment in a window box.
Yeah, you can. And that's another, we will do a gardening episode, even though we're not a gardening podcast.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some even apartment fixes where you don't have anywhere outside. Also gardening, and this is the survivalist part, right?
Yeah.
And
it's a little bit prepper.
I don't necessarily think we are going to run out of food. Entirely. I think it's possible.
Yeah.
I'm not like it's going to happen next year, but I can tell you it will happen in CCR's lifetime.
It will.
And so he needs to know how to grow shit.
Yes.
And even though, you know, he's a kid, so he's fucking pain in the ass half the time, you know, eventually by the time he's ready to leave the house, he's going to know how to grow his own fucking food without chemicals.
Which is a skill that's been lost.
Yeah.
Our generation doesn't have it.
No, not at all. And man, let me tell you, it's work if you want it to be. I want it to be because I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
I'm getting something out of it while I'm doing it. So I'm, you know, I no chemicals.
Yeah.
Only plant-based fertilizer.
Yeah.
And I'm working on making my own worm tea. It's really satisfying. It's scientifically satisfying.
Yeah.
So it's in the brain because there's a lot going on, and really it's up to you, and it isn't, and it's pretty and it's neat and it's tragic and
it's like what you said. It's when we're talking about the practicality of making sure that CCR can grow his own goddamn food someday.
Yeah.
That's also creating hope
right.
for the future.
Right.
That.
Right.
That. Maybe he will have a future and that there will be other people like him
right.
that will have a future
right.
and that will have a learn to adapt
and find happiness in different places
and find happiness in different places. And they will have their entire childhood and into their adult life have told different stories and have had different definitions of like what you said, Casey, happiness, meaning and purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. And comfort.
So in short, new hope is totally upending your comfortable life and getting a Volkswagen bus and just moving out into the Sonora Desert.
No, those buses are not good.
And just fucking smoking weed, bro.
Yeah,
and
the weed
just
part.
Fucking talking about space. That's new hope.
Well, that's a possibility.
Yeah.
You'll be outside.
You'll be outside. Yeah. You'll know where your water comes from.
Yeah. You'll know scorpions.
Yeah, man. And you just be fucking hanging it out there, bro.
Yeah.
Just with your dog.
Yeah, whatever. So there's a lot of ways to do it. And that's one way.
Yeah, our way is one way. That's one way.
Yeah. There's lots in between. And let me tell you, you pick one and it's a fucking gateway drug to like saying, you know what? I'm not fucking going to happy hour with Stacy this weekend.
Yeah.
This is fucking stupid.
It's freeing.
It really is.
Yeah, and you're like...
I never wanted to go either anyways. I always just felt I had to... You know, stop it. Don't do what you think you have to. Don't do what the machine tells you. Be a fucking deviant, man.
Yeah, man. And
go look at a bug.
And maybe even the first step before you're like, I want to look at a bug, right? Because most people aren't like, I want to look at a bug that'll make me happy. One of the first steps is just stopping doing what you're doing now that's making you unhappy.
Yeah.
And there are so many people out here. This is a big issue that I have, but I feel like as the world gets crazier, more and more people are getting sucked into video games. I don't think it's because the games are getting better or the graphics are getting better. I think it's because they're like, I don't have hope. and I'm just going to fucking drown myself in this shit.
I can speak to that. And we should probably do an episode about kind of that whole mentality. And
the psychology of getting addicted to video games. Yeah. But hey, man, if going to happy hour with Stacy ain't working for you, if going to the next sports ball game isn't working for you, if climbing the corporate again, it's like, it's all that shit, right?
Right.
It's all that shit. That's the old story. That's the old hope.
It really is. It's
and it ain't working,
folks.
It's
not working.
It's not working.
It's not working for anybody. It's really not.
And we're simply advocating for recognizing that it's not working, going the fuck outside and looking at some shit.
Well, and I got to tell you, too, share your fucking enthusiasm, man, because it is contagious. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I've been like, holy shit, did you see that fucking butterfly? That's the most beautiful thing I ever saw. And they never saw a fucking butterfly before, even though they fly all the time. Mm-hmm. And they see it and they're like, oh my God, do you know what that is? That's the prettiest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. That thing's amazing. Share your fucking enthusiasm, man, because you know, people don't know where to look anymore.
Yeah, man. So just fucking fire up the vape pen and then just be like, hey, man, I know you've like seen a butterfly, but have you like fucking seen
no,
a
have
butterfly?
You been a butterfly?
Have you talked to the butterfly?
The butterfly.
Man.
They fly fucking really good for looking like they don't.
And that's new hope.
That's new hope.
So if you're struggling with cultivating a new hope out there, so are we. And we are starting to figure it out.
We do the best we can.
Yeah.
And we're not perfect. We're getting there.
And we're early on
the
journey.
And we need to learn from other people.
Yeah.
And we want to hear from you. With other people. And we need other people to connect with other people.
Yeah.
And all of that.
So write us a story. Tell us how you are cultivating new hope. Real quick, though, let's do five headlines from Casey's phone. All right. So this is five headlines from Casey's phone, where she reads five headlines that the Google machine showed her because it thinks it knows who she is. And I'm supposed to guess which one she clicked on.
Here's headlines. Does Google know me better or JP? Avoiding climate chaos means unprecedented change, UN report. That's on physics.org.
Mm-hmm. I think we've heard physics.org before. She's blocked like the New York Times, Washington Post. Like,
yeah, fuck those
Fox
people.
News and all that shit.
Oh,
now,
my
but,
God, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
I keep Reddit, though, because sometimes there's good cat pictures. Okay, number two. Sickly sweet, artificial sweeteners turn gut bacteria toxic, says joint study. And that was on a website I've never seen before. Mm-hmm. MattZav.com.
Okay.
All right. Dead kittiwakes, dwindling fish and oceans of plastic. My voyage of discovery. The Guardian.
The Guardian. Man, The Guardian is weird, right?
Fuck The Guardian.
Yeah, they cover like subjects, but they do it in such an obtuse and up your ass way. It's like if you were an iconoclast at Columbia Journalism School, then you can totally write for us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
fuck
yeah,
you, man.
Yeah, you know how to weave the story, so nobody really knows what you mean.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You read every Guardian article is like, I once went on a fishing boat expedition where I fished and I totally ate fish and I made money, but I was sort of slumming it. And anyway, and then I got my PhD and I know that this world leader is a dickhead, but I also really like my new Nikes.
Yeah. And you should bank at this bank.
Yeah. And you're like,
wait, what is this? Was this advertising? Was this a giant advertisement?
What was the thing in there about the mini golf? What was that escapade about?
I know.
What the fuck are you doing, Guardian?
I know.
Who
I know.
Are you writing
they're,
for?
They're like, but they're what's sad is they're better than the New York Times.
Yeah. All right. Continue.
All right. Number four. Wind power makes the ground warmer even as it cools the planet.
Oh, that sounds like a dumb GOP talking point.
I know. Ars Technica. Okay. Last one. Pentagon's plan to deliver viruses via insects could end up as bioweapon, scientists warn.
Oh my God, this is too easy.
And
it's definitely the fucking last one.
And that's
because she's
IFL,
a virus freak.
I am. That's IFL science.
I fucking love science. We're not afraid to say the name of your website, IFL Science.
I know, it'll be really long, but I'm all for saying fucking your website. Yeah. Oddly, you're wrong.
No.
I am. You are. That's just a bad idea. Let's not deliver viruses and insects. That's a bad idea.
I mean, I want to hear him out. I mean,
but it's funny.
Do they have
scientists warn, but they don't have any choice in the matter. Like, scientists aren't in charge, or they're scientists, but they're, you know, the kind of scientists that work for the fucking Pentagon.
You know what's fucked up? Like, the hubris of the idea that putting bioweapons in insects is like a novel idea. Like, insects already carry bioweapons.
Right.
It'll end up as a clusterfuck.
Yeah. Okay. So anyways, the one I did read.
Yeah.
With all the shit talking we did on The Guardian, it was Dead Kittiwakes, Dwindling Fish and Oceans of Plastic, My Voyage of Discovery. You know what he discovered? You know what he discovered? He discovered Dead Kittiwakes, Dwindling Fish and Oceans of Plastic. There was no more to that story besides regurgitated Guardian articles.
What's the through line there?
It was so stupid. It was horrible. And it was really, really long. I admit, I skimmed at spots because I was like, I already know what this paragraph says. I'm not even going to read it.
Yeah, it's these like esoteric anecdotes and then a bunch of philosophy.
And it's all regurgitation.
And then some like pop political observations. Yeah. We're like, what?
Yeah, and then it's always like, well, you know, we would if we could, but there's all these external forces.
So as you can see here, the problem is with intrinsic reactionary. So please support our journalism.
But also patting themselves on the back.
Yeah, at least we're standing up. We're speaking truth to power.
Kitty Wakes.
One word.
It's one word.
Name of a bird.
K-I-T-T-I-W-A-K.
Not a funeral for your cat.
Aww.
Kitty Wakes. So sorry for your loss. So sorry for your loss.
That's a good commercial. We should get a Guardian reporter on.
Yeah. Why do you guys suck so bad?
That's what
I don't even think there's Guardian reporters.
Gravelly voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Increasingly so with the cotton mouth.
Maybe a little bit of cotton mouth problem. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to wrap up this episode 4 of Maximum Carbon Sinkhole, Cultivating a New Hope, with some listener feedback. So what did we get from last week? Last week's question was what hope are you still clinging to? So what do we got? Who wrote in?
So we got two emails.
All right. Let's hear.
First one, KCJP. Well, I'm depressed. Thanks. I think maybe Kevin E.
Well, Kevin, hitting rock bottom is the first step to climbing out.
Yeah. So hopefully you got a little bit out of this episode.
Kevin, I think you've still got further to go if you're sending us emails like that. Woe is me. You depress me.
No, I think it's more of the you're not sure. Thanks. I think maybe either be thankful or tell us to fuck off.
Yeah.
We're cool with either.
And Kevin, be depressed or don't be depressed.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. All right. And the last one is from our good and faithful Mike R.
Mike is solid. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah. Fuck Eco Buddies.
How did Mike find us? Wait, what did Mike say?
Fuck Eco Buddies.
Fuck Eco Buddies. Oh, Eco Buddies is the commercial from the last episode. If you have not listened to episode 3, Slaying Hope, just highly recommended because Eco Buddies is
our sponsor.
Our sponsor
is really
Eco Buddies.
We really are behind this one.
So we're paid to write and produce the commercials.
Right.
In addition to running them. So we're kind of a one-stop shop.
So if you've, email us.
Would highly recommend episode 3, Slaying Hope, for the Eco Buddies commercial alone.
Yeah.
So
yeah, honestly.
Mike R. Good fuck Eco Buddies.
Yeah. Well, I guess he tried them, didn't have any luck.
If you had a bad customer experience with Eco Buddies,
we're the Yelp of Eco Buddies.
We don't run Eco Buddies, but we're happy to pass the message along.
Yeah.
All right. So thanks for the listener feedback.
Please email us at
it's carbonsinkhole@protonmail.com. carbonsinkhole@protonmail.com. Send us a message. What's up? And today's question, today's homework is,
what is your new hope?
What is your new hope?
Yeah.
How are you cultivating hope?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or so, what do you want to try? Or what are you struggling with? Or how can we help you?
Yeah. So this week's homework is, tell us how you're cultivating hope, or tell us how you're struggling with cultivating a new hope. If you're still struggling to kill the old myths, the old stories, if you're not sure how to adapt, let us know that too. And maybe we can, you know, give you our 2 cents, or if you've figured out some way to cultivate hope, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah.
And we'll share it on the next podcast.
If you share something you're embarrassed to give up, I'll share something that was maybe embarrassing for me to give up.
I'll tell you right now, the thing that I've been most embarrassed to give up is the tire black. I have always loved, even if I had a dirty truck, making the tire super shiny, the shiny foam, like the Armor All you put on it.
Wow.
I've been embarrassed
to give
that up.
You're willing to hit rock bottom and totally embarrass yourself, and nobody's even embarrassed themselves yet. So there you get one.
I needed
free
to get that out. So yeah. I washed all the vehicles this
shameful
weekend, including the tractor and the trailer and all that stuff. And not a tractor trailer, a tractor, comma, and a trailer, different things, different sizes, and the vehicles. And I searched all over the garage, all over the barn, all over the shed. I was like, I swear there was a little bit of tire black left. And
I huffed it.
The tire. That explains the gravelly voice. Bye.
I just got to be honest with you. I'm not one of them bullshit show business people, man, who makes believe everything is going okay. You know? Because everything is not going okay, man.